Today's daf brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, happy to be with you all over the world, is daf Samach Vov. We're holding on the bottom of daf Samach Hei Amud Beit, and we are going to now get into a new kind of area in which we want to know what the relationship is of broken things, broken people, sick people, things that will require extensions that are not part of normal bigud of human beings, but recognizing that the human condition can be extremely, extremely tragic, and there is lots of things that can go wrong, and there are many strange things that we need to do sometimes to affect an actual usable human condition. Sometimes that has to do with pretty sad kind of physical changes, like somebody who's lost both of his legs and can only move around on wheels, on a little platform with wheels. Or sometimes it could be psychological situations, such as depression, and the various things that need to be done that are either physical or absurdly psychological, and they seem to be completely off the wall in terms of the normal human experience, sometimes become part of the extended human experience, which, of course, is the depth of the Shabbos orientation to Menucha for Behema and that which is within you. So Hakiteya Yotzei B'Kavshelo. So starting off easy, we have over here somebody who's missing a leg. So he's allowed to go out wearing a prosthetic leg, but the prosthetic leg that we're talking about over here is not really a usable prosthesis. It's simply, in essence, a decoration so that it looks like he's got a leg. He can't really put any weight on it. And it is actually, his weight is carried by crutches or by a stick that he'll carry. And this is there in order for him to appear normal. So according to Rabbi Meir, he'd be allowed to be yotzei with this, wearing this prosthetic leg. Now, there's a big machlokas over here between Rashi and other Rishonim as to what the issue is. So Rashi learns that the question over here revolves around whether this thing is essentially a shoe. So in other words, a shoe is a, as Bob is pointing out, cosmetic, so to speak, besides being an actual protective beged. So this aspect of the shoe, this is what he puts over, so to speak, and above, whatever is left of his foot, which could be a stump. And the shiloh would revolve around, according to Rashi, whether it is considered to be a shoe or whether we see it as something that is carried around, doesn't fit the bill of shoe. And we'll see why that would be true. Other Rishonim learned that the question over here is nothing to do with is it a shoe, because who cares if it's a shoe? The question over here is, this is obviously an extended part of his appearance in the world, and therefore his relationship as a human being, to an extended self. And there's no reason why there should be a problem other than the fact that this is something that is easily falling and therefore not that well attached. It's the kind of thing which can fall off, which would require him to get it all reattached. And therefore, we're chayshish that he's going to carry it. The Tosis points out, what do you mean he's going to carry it? If he doesn't have it, he's not going to be able to walk. But that isn't really true, because as we explained, it's essentially cosmetic and not really a prosthetic leg. Because of that, whatever it is that he's using, his crutches, he would, in fact, still be shayach to carrying it. Okay, totally different approaches. And the main sugya is not here, but revolves around other issues, as we're going to see. This has to do with whether it would serve as a chalitza tool. If it's a shoe, so then it would be okay for chalitza. It would also be nogea, whether he would be allowed to walk in the azor of the Beit HaMikdash, when you're not allowed to go where you're wearing shoes. So the question is it a shoe? That seems to be the parshtus of our Gemara, even though Tosis brings contradictions from the Gemara in Yuma. Okay, so according to Rabbi Meir, it says over here, let's take Rashi's approach, it says over here that this is basically a shoe, and therefore he could wear it. Whereas Rabbi Yossi says, you can't, it's not considered to be a shoe. Again, even here, that issue could revolve around, does a shoe have to be a close fit to your foot and bend with your foot. And that could be the machlokas, so that if it's made out of a solid substance like wood, that is not a shoe. That's a clog. So some learn a clog can easily fall off anyway, so that boils down to the same issue as a tosfos. But others learn that that memela would affect the definition of shoe vis-a-vis chalitza and so on. And that's why the Gemara makes those comparisons. Ve'imyo yeshlo beit kibul kititin, then it could become tame. Now, the beit kibul, as we've been learning, of course, throughout the Masechet, the interrelationship of these sugyas with the entire idea of kelim and what is considered to be a mekabel tumah, this prosthetic leg, since it's not meant to support his weight, is not going to become tamei midras. If it would have been shaykh to tamei midras, then, of course, the din would have been that it's mekabel any tumah, because kol tamei midras is metame with tumas maga as well. But in this case, what you have over here is essentially a wooden extension that does not have a beit kibul. And as we've learned in Kalim, pshute kli eitz are not mekabel tumah at all. And since this is not mekabel midras, the only thing that could make it be mekabel any tumah was if it did have a beit kibul. Now, it's true that it's hollowed out in order for him to put his stump into it. But, oh, by the way, I should mention that not everybody agrees it's a stump. There's a shita in Tosfos that holds that what we're talking about over here is something that attaches to the knee, even if the amputation was done below the knee, and that he would bend his knee backwards, whatever's left of it, and would attach this prosthetic leg to his knee. And then, assuming he has a little bit of a stump that's sticking out, it would cover it over. Remember, they didn't wear pants, they wore skirts, so it wouldn't be knicker, and he would look more or less normal, which also strengthens, like, all of these issues, not meant for tzimuchim and so on. But anyway, getting back to it, let's assume even that it holds his stump, right? Or it holds his knee. And why is it not considered to be tamei midras? Why is it not considered to be a base kibul for the knee? And the answer is actually an important answer in understanding kelim and the idea of what shayach to midras. Since over here, it isn't supporting his weight, and on the contrary, there are supports that go around his upper leg, his thigh, and they are attached underneath to this leg to make sure it doesn't fall off. A beit kibul is not carried around by something else. It's the thing that carries around what's in it. So since over here, his leg is pulling up this prosthetic thing, so you can't call that a beit kibul. If, on the other hand, it's filled with some type of material to soften it, then it does hold those kititin to enable him not to get bruised all the time and scratched up when he puts his knee or the stump, depending on the shita, into this thing. Then it would be a beit kibul, but it would be a beit kibul for the kititin, not for the leg. So if it has a beit kibul, then it would be tummy. Smuchot shalo, tmeim midras. On the other hand, if you're talking about the smuchot, so the smuchot, they would be the supports. That would be made out of leather. And those are put over the case of, that we're getting a little bit into deeper trouble in terms of the human. He's lost both of his legs. So over there, if he has these smuchot, then the way that he gets around is he would have to walk around on his lower, by pushing himself up, right? So what he does over there, he covers whatever's left of his legs. He covers with leather in order for them, they're going to actually be in contact with the ground. So those smuchot would actually be considered to be really something that he will put down and support himself with. And because of that, they are real medras. If he was a zov, since they support his body, so he moves and then sits down on them again, so then that would be a tamei midras, indeed. I skipped again. Yotzim ben b'shabbos, the smuchot shelo tamei midras, and he would then be able to go out on Shabbos with them, because that is obviously extended clothing, and he would be allowed to go into the azora, because they don't cover feet. How about the kisei and the smuchot shelo? Now, if you're talking about a guy who can only go around with a little wheelchair, but this is not really a wheelchair because it's just, it's not somebody else wheels him. It's that he has to go around and wheel himself. So he's got a lower body and doesn't have any usable legs. He's completely crippled. So in this case, he goes around with what boils down to a wagon with wheels. So then he will push himself up, pull the bottom of his body, which will roll because it's on this piece over here that has wheels on them. Then he sits down again, and he again will put his whole weight down on his arms, lift himself up, pull it again, and come sitting down on this kisei. So over there, it's Tumei Midras. There, for sure, it's going to be Metamei Midras because his entire body weight is on this thing. And so because of that, he is really completely, this is made only in terms of Midras. And we cover up the stumps with this leather because over there, when he pushes himself, he's going to have to, on some level, drag that leg, whatever's sticking out, is going to be on the ground, pulling it along. And there'll be a little bit of his weight, whatever he can, on that, so it will support his weight. And therefore, in that case, we do consider it to be the equivalent of a shoe. And therefore, he can't go into, since they're worn on whatever is left, it could be over here he has legs and they just don't work at all. Or if he has a stump, then this literally is put on over there to touch the ground. So then, for sure, you don't go into the Beis HaMikdash with them, because that really is like a shoe, and you're not allowed to go in with a shoe into the Azara. Now, this is the question, if we're talking about leather, where we're back to talking about wood, because according to Rashi, Elibit Rabbi Yossi, wood is by definition, I consider it to be a shoe anyway. So then this wouldn't be true, Elibit Rabbi Yossi, if we're talking about wood. Fine. Okay, so the question over here is on Shabbos. On Shabbos, you can't go out with it for the simple reason that they always are falling off because they're not really on the ground. They're sticking out, and it's just when he lifts himself up that then the angle touches the ground. It's easy for them to fall off. So over there, Rashi holds, this is the best way of understanding it, that there's a problem with them because they fall off. Rashi says that he heard from his Rabbein that the issue over here is that they're not really absolutely need it. And because of that, they're a masa, which Rashi doesn't hold of. Okay, so in this case, there would be a nichnas in behem. How about a lokitman? A lokitman is an interesting idea, and it just shows you how crazy humans are. You think that it's a modern idea that we turn ourselves into monsters to scare the kids, right? Well, actually, they used to sell these monster masks so that people could terrify children, as Rashi says. Lahav eat to terrify children. So they sell these things because everybody gets a kick out of terrifying children, right? So they sell these masks. You know, if you put on this mask, it's not really clothing. It's just a plain masa. So because of that, it would be, first of all, it's tar, obviously, because it doesn't have any type of shimush as a beged, and you're not allowed to wear it on Shabbos for obvious reasons. Okay. We'll see if there's other pshatim in the Gemara as to what this lokitman might be. Now, there was a question over here about the girsa of the Mishnah, whether our girsa was correct. Is it Rabbi Meir, who was the one that's Matir Rabbi Yossi, who answers, or was it the other way around? So Rava asked Rabbi Nachman, how do you have the Mishnah? Hey, it's not. I don't know. I don't know which one is accurate. Okay, well, which way do we paskin? Can you or can you not go out with this prosthetic leg? Amale loyadan? I don't know that either. Says the Gemara, well, I mean, we do know that there's a machlokas over here because Shmuel says the right way to read the Mishnah is ein hakita, in which case Rabbi Meir is saying it starts the Mishnah off with ein hakita yotze. So somebody who's an amputee is not allowed to go out, divrei Rabbi Meir, and Rabbi Yossi is matir, the opposite of our girsa. V'chein omer Rav Huna, ein hakiteya, the opposite of our girsa. Omer Rav Yosef, well, I mean, if Shmuel says that the right way to read the Mishnah is ein hakiteya, and Rav Huna says the right way to read it is ein hakiteya, then that's got to be the way we should do it. Ananaminisne Einakiteya. The way we should read the Mishnah should go according to those shitas in the Amoraim. Why should we stick to this wrong girsa? Matkif Larova Bar Shira, excuse me, it's a big mistake. Lo Shmienu Ha'adamasni Rav Chanan Bar Rav Al-Chiya Bar Rav Kamed Rav V'Kitunet Vei Rav. There was Chanan Bar Rav, and he was teaching over this Mishnah. He used to teach Rav's kid in a little side room, in a small room off the base of Medrash. Every base of Medrash has got to have a small room to the side, which is called the Kituna. So in the Kituna of the base of Medrash over there, Rav was once listening to him say over the Mishnah, and he said the Mishnah the way that supposedly Rav and Shmuel both told you're supposed to say it, and he's teaching Rav's child, Ein akiteya yotzei bekav shelo divrei Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi Matir. And Rav was in the middle of davening, said, backwards. So he showed him with his hands that he flipped the Mishnah, which means that Rav actually did not say what you think he said. Apparently he changed his mind. And we'll see later on that it turns out everybody changed his mind, and that Rav, here we think that Rav is being chaylik on Shmuel, but if Rav is chaylik on Shmuel, he holds to the girsa of our Mishnah the way we have it, why would Rabbi Yosef say that we should go according to Shmuel? Omer Reb Nachum Bar Yitzchak, look, the easy way to remember it is Yossi Oser, so Samach Samach. If we're talking about somebody who's lying on something, which is the mission of Samach over here, so then Samach, Samach, Yossi, Oser. That's the way to remember it. And the end of it is that Shmuel even changed his mind, because it's not. If a Yavama did Chalitza with a sandal that did not belong to the Yavam, or a sandal that was made out of wood, or the Yavam was wearing a left shoe on his right foot, the chalitza is kosher. And we said over there in the Gemara, who would be the man, the Omer, who holds that a wooden sandal is considered to be a shoe, and you would be yotzei, the din of chalitza. And Shmuel said it's Rabbi Meir, and he brought a raya from our Mishnah. Because since it says here, akiteya yotzei bekav shelo divrei Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi Oser, so apparently Rabbi Meir, this is Rashi's basis for understanding the entire sugya, to be the definition of a shoe. So because of this, it's clear that Shmuel now holds that Rabbi Meir, who said that you are allowed to be yotzei, he's the one who holds that it's a kosher shoe, and because of that, it would be kosher for chalitza. But according to Shmuel, this is the wrong girsa in the Mishnah, and Shmuel should have said it was Rabbi Yossi. So you see that Shmuel changed his mind, and that, in fact, it really was Rabbi Meir, who was Matir, and Rabbi Yossi, who was Oser, and therefore now it turns out that both Rav and Shmuel hold that the correct girsa is our girsa, and even Rav Huna was the other man, the Amar, who said that we should invert the Mishnah. Even he changed his mind, because there's a braita that says, Sandal shel sayadin tamei midras v'ishach choletzit bo v'yotzim bo b'shabbat divrei Rabbi Akiva. Now, what this is not absolutely clear. What we know is, there's a machlokas really here between Rashi and Tosfos and the Ri and Tosfos. What is the sandal shel sayadin? Rashi learns that what this is a guy who's doing work with sid, which is lime. And lime is disastrous for leather. And yet that was what everybody was using to cover their walls with. And they didn't have paint. And they used sid. They used lime to get whitewash. That's the classic way that everybody took care of things, was with whitewash. And if you get that while it's still... wet to be used, it will kill the leather of your shoe. So therefore, according to Rashi, the sandal shel sayadin was made out of straw, and it was basically a disposable kind of shoe that wouldn't be much of a loss, and it wasn't damaged anyway by getting seed over it. Now the Ri learns that it was meant to be used as a covering for the normal leather shoe to protect the leather. It is not mashma that Rashi holds that that's the pshat, but we'll see what pushes him to say that. So in any event, there's also machlokas about whether it really is straw. If it's straw, it makes sense that it covered over the other shoe. But the sheet of some of the other Rishonim is that we're not talking about straw, we're talking about wood. Now, the reason that it's important to decide whether we're talking about straw or wood, which on the surface shouldn't make any difference, is because of the fact that Rashi understands the sugya to be revolving around the shita later on, that straw, as opposed to reeds, straw is not considered to be the equivalent of wood. And because of that, it could be that Bechlal, it's not Shaykh to Kabbalah's Tumas. It introduces yet another element into the Sugya. So it's important to note that we have a number of different issues over here. So we're saying it's Tamei Midras, which is strange because it isn't meant to be a shoe. It's just meant to be a cover of a shoe, at least according to the Ri. And it's not the thing that supports your weight. It's the thing that covers the shoe. And Barney is about to give me a whole deal, so I better drink. He's got to the point where I could see it in his eyes. He doesn't have to wave the thing at me threateningly. So and you can go out with it. So that would mean you can also view it as a real shoe for doing chalitza, and you can go out with it on Shabbos because it's a shoe. So says Rabbi Akiva. And the Chachomim disagreed. Vloho dulo. Because it's not considered to be a shoe. Nobody wears straw as a shoe. We'll see who shita this is in a minute. And we said, Vatnan, how do you explain the fact that this is a stira to the Mishnah? Because in the Mishnah, it says, this is a Mishnah in Ityeis, that hodu lo chachamim, that the chachamim agreed to Rabbi Akiva. I don't understand. That's a pretty big difference, wouldn't you say? Om Rav Huna. Now, this is Rav Huna who initially claimed that the Girsa in our Mishnah was backwards. And yet, Rav Huna is the one who says over here, who is the Mandi Omar that was made at Rabbi Akiva, that this is considered to be a shoe, and that you can go out with it on Shabbos, is Rabbi Meir. So even though you normally don't make a shoe out of this material, our Mishnah of Rabbi Meir would be made to Rabbi Akiva that straw would also be good. And who is the man, the armor, who wasn't made? Rabbi Yossi, who says in our Mishnah that you cannot go out on Shabbos, in which case he doesn't hold it's a normal shoe. Now, this is only true according to the Girsa of our Mishnah as we have it, not according to the Girsa of the Mishnah that Rav Huna had originally said that should be inverted. So you see from here, apparently even Rav Huna has changed his mind. So now everybody, Rav, Rav Huna, and Shmuel, everybody seems to agree that indeed the Girsa we have is correct. By the way, said Rabbi Yosef, you don't have to get into all of this, because I say, hodulo, the lo hodulo, could be a completely different question, and that's going aliba to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, because Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, as we saw in the Mishnah in Kalim, obviously, is that if you've got a machatzelet hakash, or shvoferet hakash, so if you've got straw that you make into a mat, or you've got this container that's basically a tube that's made out of a straw, Rabbi Akiva is metame, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri is metayer. So you see that things that are made out of straw, this again is the way Rashi understands it, that machlokes is whether straw, which is not included in the pasuk of eitz, or beged, or osak, doesn't say anything over there about straw, and straw is not really eitz. It's part of a plant, which is a regular vegetable, so to speak, because it's chita. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri is metayer completely. So since we make this sayadin shoe out of straw, so Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, since the same way that he argues in Kalim, and he says it's not considered to be bekabel tuma, he is the guy that told Rabbi Akiva that that's wrong, because it's made out of straw. So again, this is Rashi consistently learning that the sugya has to do with straw versus wood. Anyway, Omar Mar, you said a sandal shel sayadin is tamei midras, but how could it be tamei midras if it isn't meant for walking? According to the Ri, it's only meant as a shoe protector. So why would it be makabel tumas midras? Omar, this is exactly what the, if it really were a complete replacement for the shoe, what's the Gemara's kasha? I mean, if the guy needs to wear it while he's handling the seed, so then why wouldn't it be Metame Midras? That's really strange. That's what pushes the Ri. Tosus goes even further afield. Tosus says it isn't even a shoe at all. It's some type of a thing that is used in the application of seed. He doesn't know exactly what it is. And it's sort of shaped like a shoe, but it isn't a shoe at all. So it's a totally different approach. And then it really makes sense to ask, so why in the world would it be Tamei Midras if it's not made as a shoe at all? Om Rav Acha Bar Avula, because you could, after finishing work, instead of you're a filthy wreck, so instead of putting on your shoe, what the guy would do is he'll actually put this on his foot and walk home with it. So he's mitayel ba'atcha magiel beito. It's good for walking a couple of blocks. And since it's miyuchet for that activity as well, it would be mekabel tumas midras. Okay. This ends the sugya of the sayadim. Now, we said, getting back to the kiteya, we said that if this cosmetic prosthesis has a beit kibul for kititim, so then it's considered to be makabel tuma, not lechora, not tumas medras. Now, this turns out to be a machlokas. Omer Abaya, when we say it's makabel tuma, what we mean is that it's makabel tumas meis. By the way, whenever we say tumas meis, obviously it makes no difference whether it's tumas meis, tumas sheretz, or any other tuma, which is an avatuma. The only reason that we're saying over here it's makabel avatuma is makabel tumas meis is because we want to say that it can even be an avatuma. So if it was exposed directly to a meis, which is avi avota tuma, it can be an avatuma, because that's been the whole discussion all along. And Kalim, remember the question of if it's tamei midras, so then it's going to be makabel tuma, and it will be an avatuma. So to contrast something that's not makabel tumas midras, but nonetheless can still be an avatuma, we talk about tumas meis, which means it was exposed directly to a meis or an oel meis, not to someone who was tamei meis, but to the meis itself. And therefore, it would be an avatuma. But it really makes no difference. It would make just as much sense to say it's tamei sheretz, except that wouldn't be a very good way to juxtapose it to tumas midras. But it's not tamei midras because it doesn't support his weight. Whereas Rava says, well, but sometimes when he'll have to readjust his crutch or something, he will lean against it. So it does actually support his weight sometimes. Oh, my Rava, I'll prove to you that something which is not made essentially to support weight, but which is used that way, even though it may not be its primary use, is still going to be makabel tumas midras. How do we know that? Because every little boy needs a little red wagon. Now, what does he do with his little red wagon? Well, he carries around his toy blocks and stuff like that. True, but as everybody knows, one of the best funs of a little red wagon is when daddy puts little boy into the little red wagon and pretends that he's a toy and carries him around. Now, that usage is sufficient to give it a din of tumas midras. So agalash al katan is tumea midras because sometimes you carry the kid in the wagon. So if that's the case, the same thing is true over here. You've got this cripple, and sometimes he's got to put his weight on that thing. So that's enough to give it a din of tumas midras. Now, Tosfos doesn't like that shot because he holds that little red wagons are be'ikar made lechatchila to carry little boys around in. And therefore, how can you bring a raya that's a temporary use? Tosfos has got a great explanation. An agalash el katan is a baby walker. So the idea of a baby walker is he's not supposed to be leaning on it. It's supposed to be helping him to not be frightened when he's taking his steps, right? But sometimes, as we know, little boy gets very scared and puts his whole weight on the baby walker. And that's enough to cause the baby walker to be called, this is gorgeous, to be called tumas midras. So it would be a better raya, according to Tosfos. Okay. Anyway, says Abaye, you can't bring a raya from a baby walker or a wagon. Because hatam samech iluye, in that case, it is so much part of what it is that he's going to rest his weight on it or be inside of it. But over here, it's not something that is normally done. It's something that'll do in a pinch. Therefore, it won't become tumas midras. Omer Abaye, I'll prove to you that you're wrong and that it's not makabel tumas midras like this, because it says that if you got a walking stick that is being used by an old man, so a makel shel zikenim is tar from anything. It's not tamei midras, it's not tamei at all, because it doesn't have a base kibul. And because of that, as you see from here, look, obviously, if somebody's unsteady, he may actually rest on it, but that's not its primary purpose. And because of that, it's not considered to be tumas midras. The same thing is true over here. The primary purpose of this leg is cosmetic and not supportive. Whereas Rava says there's a big difference between the case of the makel shel zikenim, because by the way, it's a beautiful, beautiful insight into language that's coming up over here. The point over here is of the The walking stick is for what purpose is it used? It's used l'terutze sugya avida. It's used to give a teretz to the whole sugya is what it sounds like, right? Now you can try to understand where that word sugya comes from and where that word terutz comes from, okay? Because terutze sugya does not mean to answer the sugya's questions. It means to balance your walking. Now that means that the idea of sugya and terutz, sugya would come from the word for many issues, sage. So it represents the equation, which requires balancing. You need to balance that equation. So the sugya is the way that all of the various factors add up. Human balance is extremely complex and is dealing with many, many dozens of different muscles and muscle groups at the same time and a lot of brain function, and therefore requires constant terutz, which is putting things into their proper place, and that is necessary for a sugya. So if the old man is walking around with his walking stick, he's constantly being mataretz the sugya, so to speak. That's beautiful. And because of that, the idea that he's going to be leaning on it is, I mean, that's really not what it's meant, even when he puts some of his weight on it. It's meant to balance. It's not meant to lean on. Over here, the idea, though, of this wooden thing is actually used to really put his weight on. And sometimes, and he really does. He actually, it's made in such a way that it could support his weight. I mean, it's painful and so on, but when he needs to, he'll use it. The next case we had, we talked about the case of this little chair that the guy will use. And the we added also the leather leggings. Are going to be mekabel tumas midrash. You're not allowed to go without with them because they fall off. You're not allowed to go into the base of midrash with them because they really do cover his feet or whatever's left of his atrophied feet. And because of that, it has a din of a leather covering, which is usher in the Azorah. Toni Tanakh Amidah Rabbi Yochanan, nichnasim behem la'azorah. So someone was staying over a brisa to Rabbi Yochanan says, you are allowed to go in. And Rabbi Yochanan says, what's wrong with you, man? Listen, I've got a brayta that says beferish that you could actually do chalitza with this leg covering, okay? So then it means that it's a shoe. And you're trying to tell me you can go into the Azorah with a shoe? You've got it wrong. The way to read this brayta that you're telling me over is tanei einichvasim bem lazara. And a lokitim in our Torah, what exactly are these lokitim? Now, we know that they have something to do with acting out and funny things, but it's not completely clear. So Rabbi Abo says, well, it's one of those, we talked about this in Kalim as well, it's a chamra de akfas. It's one of those, it's a wooden donkey, you know, or something that's meant to look as if it is an animal, and you put it between your legs. It looks like, you're supposed to look like you're actually riding on it, you do all kinds of tricks, but it's really supported with straps from behind. And that is not considered to be tumas midras because you can't really put your weight on it. I mean, and you can't go out on Shabbos because you're just carrying it. It isn't really part of your clothing. Rav Bar Papa says it's stilts. Kshire. It's walking around on stilts, which is problematic because it is not clear why they would not be mekabel tumas midras. There's a lot of discussion in the Rishon if it really means stilts. And Rava Bar Avuna says it's these monster masks that are used for scaring kids. So parame. But again, they cannot be considered to be begodim. And now we note that our kapitan is really ready today and has been practicing. Wow. That wasn't bad at all. Let me tell you, David Wilner had a picture last week in the Pelegesh Begiva Chabura that had a Chinese version of you that was showing up as his picture. He has no idea where it came from. His picture that he put into Zoom was himself. And somehow or other, it came out with a perfect replica of you, except in one of these old Chinese drawings. And your eyes were, you know, more Chinese, but it was Richie to a T. And I asked him to send it to me, and he had no idea that it was there. Instead, he sent me a picture of himself. I told him next time I'll have to take a screenshot because he has no idea how to get it even. When he looks at the picture, it's him, and he sends me a picture of him. So anyway, so that definitely supported the Chinese Richie. It had a very, very oriental ring to it. So Habanim Yotzim B'Ksharim. Now we're talking about issues that have to do with psychological problems, as we'll see. So youngsters, young males, it's Dafka Banim, which is going to be a problem because we need to figure out what type of illness would affect Banim specifically. So boys can go out wearing knots. Not clear what that is. B'nai Malachim, and they can go out wearing these bells. Now, these are things that only special kind of people will go out with. And yet, as we learned before, Kol Adam, once something is true about a certain group, really anybody could do this, except Dibru Chachamim Ba'oveh. So wherever it would be needed, it would be considered to be a beget. And we don't know what they are. So what are these Ksharim? Omer Adamari, Omer Nachman Bar Baruch, Omer Rav Ashi Bar Ovin, Omer Rav Yehuda. These are Kishurei Pua. These are, remember that Kisharim are essentially used as the same idea as a kamiya, something that you tie together. So you would put different types of spices and so on. And this is talking about Kishurei Pua. They're knots of Pua. Pua is usually translated as matter. It's a kind of dye. And it is very useful for curing disease. Rashi says, I have no idea what disease. But anyway, that was the belief. So Amar Abaye. Now, Abaye, remember, was in a position of not really having parents. He was raised by this nani, who he called mommy. So Amra li aim. So my mommy told me that Talata Mukmi, if you got three of these nuts, then they will prevent an illness from getting worse. Chamisha actually will cure. And if you go around wearing seven of these things, oh my God, you become absolutely impervious, even to kshafim. Omer Vacha Bar Yaakov, now wait a minute. I mean, it's not just any old kind of pua that will help over here. It's only going to work if it was never, this kesher was never exposed to the sun, never exposed to the moon, never was exposed to rain, never was exposed to the sound of any type of metal banging on anything, was never exposed to the sound of a rooster's crow, and was never exposed to footsteps. Omer Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchak, well, that's really great, which means that this is ridiculous from beginning to end. Everybody was preparing to run out to their local supermarket and get hold of a bunch of pua because, I mean, it was like, wow. And now, nafal puta babira. Basically, you threw the whole thing into a garbage dump because there's no way to use, there's no such thing. Anyway, but this can't be what it means. Why? Because then why is it that it would only refer to boys? There's nothing with boys. Afilo banot nami. And then, and why does it say kitanim? I mean, according to this, we're dealing with some kind of remedy. Then why wouldn't it be good for adults? Afilo gedolim nami, you got it all wrong. If we're talking about something that affects only children and only males, what we're talking about is depression. And what we're referring to is Mike Sharim, we're talking about Kod Amr of Avi Barun Amr of Chama Barguria. We're talking about a problem of a child who is Yeshlo Ga'aguin al Aviv. So this child cannot handle separation from his father. There's all kinds of different approaches to what this is referring to. Is it referring to just a father who knows he's going to have to be going on a business trip and so on, which is Rashi's pshat? But others learn it's talking about a father who is terminally ill and knows that his child is going to suffer terribly upon his death, and wants to do something to prevent that problems. And others learn that it's talking about that the child already is in a depression from having lost a father. And so what you do over there is you take a ritzu'ah, mimin al shel yamin, so you take a strap from the father's right shoe, and you tie it on to the boy's arm, to his left arm, and this is going to somehow or other help his depression. Now, the reason that, therefore, it would be only ketanim is because, obviously, that's the only way that you have that type of deep connection to a parent that will actually throw him into a depression. And the reason that it's only boys who lose a father is because normally the relationship of the father is, at that age, is to the young son, and therefore the son will suffer the most with his father's death. Omer of Nachum Bar Yitzchak, the way to remember this is tefillin, where you tie something with your right hand onto your left arm. And if you do it the other way around, v'chilufe is sakanta. If you do it the other way around, you can cause really serious clinical depression, and don't do this. Which is interesting, because the mashma'ut is, in many of the Rishonim, is that this entire thing is purely psychological, has no physical meaning at all. And because of that, to say that chiluf is sakanta is very strange, unless the Mishnah is again further stressing the impact that your psychological relationship to the world around you makes, that it can actually endanger you, which of course is true. As the Rambam points out, you know, it's the first thing that'll kill you is if you believe you've ingested poison, you know, and you're, oh my God, you're dying. Then it turns out that no, actually it was just plain Coca-Cola. Then you're really done. So then, all of a sudden, everything is fine. Okay, so then chilufa sakanta itself would be a chiddush. Omar Avim Baruna, Rav Chama Bar Guria, sachufikas ateburi b'shabbat shapir dami, to create a vacuum above your navel. How would you? What they used to believe was, again, if you're having terrible stomach cramps, you can take a boiling hot cup that is going to be cooling, put the cup on your navel, and then as it cools, it creates a vacuum, which that vacuum will pull up the navel and anything that is close to the navel. And because of that, it will cure your tummy ache. You are allowed, this is something that you ought to try next time you get drunk. If there's a cop around and you're in your car, always make sure that you've got oil and salt. As soon as you hear the siren, put oil and salt on your hand palms and on the palms of your feet, and hope that by the time the cop gets there, this magic recipe will have taken the alcohol out of your blood. Because when Ravuna used to come back from the yeshiva, and his Rebbe was Rav, and when Rav used to come back from the yeshiva, his Rebbe was Reb Chiya, and Reb Chiya used to come back from yeshiva, and his Rebbe was Rebbe. Now, all of these guys would come back home dead drunk, as you know, is normally the situation in yeshiva. And as we had seen before, and we talked about Chamra Bepume de Rabbana, they used to Bedavka make the better Bochrim drunk. Because if they wouldn't get high, then they wouldn't really be able to experience fully the implications of the Torah that they were learning, so they had to let go a bit. However, they did not want to send them home in that condition. They certainly didn't want to have the cops coming. So in order to get the kids to look like they weren't totally dead drunk, so before they would send them home, they would rub their palms, feet, and hand with this mixture of salt and shemen, but it went along with a little incantation. So they would shayfile the gvayata the adayu v'gvayata the karayu. So they would take this mashka v'milcha, and then they would say, "Kiecha the tzoli ha mishka leitzel chamri de planya bar planita." Just like this oil is getting gradually is becoming more and more thinned, it's salt, so it becomes clear because the warmth, body warmth, is changing it. The wine that is causing this poor kid to be so drunk should gradually become tzalil, tzalil in that sense means of normal mind. Now, Elo, if that doesn't work, or if he doesn't have that, there's something else you can do. You can bring the closing, the seal that they used to put on with this wet clay of a barrel, and soak it in water, and use that for your incantation. And you say, in the same way that tzalil ha'ishia, so to Litzok Hamida Planya Bar Palnita. By the way, you see from here that you use the mother's name in this incantation, not the father's name, which became the way in which one is mispalal on a chai, at least among the Ashkenazim, to use the mother's name. you are allowed to strangle somebody on Shabbos. Strangling somebody on Shabbos, you would think, I mean, you've been dying to strangle this guy for years, right? You finally get him and you're thinking, oh my God, it's Shabbos. I'm not able to strangle him today. No, you're allowed to strangle people on Shabbos. Well, it's not exactly what the Gemara means, but what it means is a chiropractor is allowed to do his strangling, and you would swear that this is going to kill the guy, which only does rarely, which is interesting. So that is mutter on Shabbos because it's not considered to actually be part of the gezerah of against medication because it's not involved in any way with something that has to do with grinding the ingredients, and therefore there was no gezerah. That's what some Rishonim learned. Other Rishonim actually learned that it could be a sakana not to do it. So this was, again, note that this was the third thing in a row that we've had from Avin Baruna, Omer of Chama Bar Guria. And another thing, the fourth thing in a row we've had is Avin Baruna, Omer of Chama Bar Guria, is Lapupi Anukim Shabbat HaShapir Damir. Remember that they believed that you needed to swaddle a newborn infant because these kids come out looking like their bones have been all twisted and they look really funny. And because of that, people thought they looked funny because of the trauma of birth, so they've gotten all messed up, and the only way they're going to get straight again is if you swaddle them. This was until very recently. They still do in many places in the world. They swaddle the infant to allow the bones to straighten out after their terrible experience, and because of that, you could do this on Shabbos as well. So Shapir Damir, you could do it on Shabbos because, again, it doesn't ever get to use a medication that needs to be ground. Or because maybe for an infant, any type of pain is considered to be a sakana. There's a lot of different approaches to why it's mutter, same as in the other case. Now, Rav Papa, when he would quote the Avin Bar Huna, Omar Rav Chama Bar Guria cases, he would say two cases about bonim, but Rav Zvid would only say one of the cases of bonim. So we had the question of the what the idea was for depression, and what the idea is over here, wrapping up the little baby. So Tarvayo Repapa would say bonim, and he would quote Avin Bar Huna for both of those, din for depression and for lefufa yinuka. And Rav Zvid, however, he only had one mimer because he had learned that the thing about, this is a whole new type of therapy, right, for depression. So it's a tying therapy. Maybe we should be machadish it. So he learned that the tying therapy idea is actually not from, that is Avin Bar Huna. But the other one of Lefufa Yenuka was said by Rabba Bar Bar Chana, the Omer Rabba Bar Bar Chana, Lefufa Yenuka B'Shabbata, Shapir Dami. So apparently he was the source of that mimer, and therefore he thought it was a mistake to quote it as one of the mimorim that we had before. Omer Rabbi, another thing that my mommy told me is that whenever you're supposed to be saying one of these magical incantations, you use the mother's name. So it's Ploni Bar Planita. So Kominyana Bishma Di Ima. And whenever you're going to tie something onto an arm, it's always on your left arm. And another thing that mommy told me is there are very specific directions about how many times you're supposed to repeat these incantations. So if the prescription comes along with a specific number of incantations, then you better follow the directions, okay? So Kominyana de Mefarshek and Mefarshek. But how about, as usually happens, they never write in what the correct dosage is, you know. They assume that the druggist is going to write it, but he never does. So what do you do then? So if you don't have the proper dosage, the normal dosage is 41 repetitions of an incantation. So just remember that next time you get a missing prescription. And there was something else that is mutter to go out with on Shabbos. Again, all of these issues, as the Meiri has pointed out, are not meant to be taken as actual physical things, as the Rambam explains. These are issues that are segulot. And the inyan of a segula is that it has no physical basis. And the only reason that we allow these things, bichlal, in other words, why is it not considered to be superstition and not considered to be darkei ha'emori, is because it doesn't have any religious element associated with it. It's just folk medication that has anecdotal evidence associated with it. all of these things, again, according to the Rambam, are defined by things that do not fall under any type of medical logic. And because of that, they are always going to be anecdotal, no matter how many times they prove themselves. And because of that, we're moderate as long as they don't have any religious element. Once they have a religious element, then we're worried about Darkei Amori, and or if they don't have anything that would give us anecdotal evidence that the preacher is telling you to do it. So Tana Rabbanan, Yotzim be'evet tekuma b'Shabbos. What they used to do is they would have these special stones that a woman who was likely to miscarry would walk around with a stone of a particular weight. And there's all kinds of shittas what exactly these things were. Some learn it was a naturally occurring stone that contained a shaking stone in it. And others learned that it was some type of, maybe, I don't know, diamond or magical, very, very hard metal, maybe from a meteorite or something. And it was believed that that prevented a miscarriage. So you're allowed to go out with that on Shabbos because that would be the beget, so to speak, the extended self of this pregnant woman. And Mishum Rabbi Meir Amar, if you found another stone that would be precisely the weight, not that you adjusted it, but you found a stone that would be precisely the weight of the Evan Tekuma, that is also useful for preventing miscarriages. And it's mutter, not only if she personally had miscarried, but even if we've got this chashash that she might miscarry, maybe because of a history in her family. And as a matter of fact, even if she's not sure that she's pregnant, we're worried that she might be pregnant, bitapil, again, based on family history, that is considered to be mutter to wear on Shabbos, again, because it's the norm to walk around with. But let me just make it clear. You can't make a stone of the same weight. It's only if it was found to be exactly the same weight. You can't add on a little bit or subtract a little bit. Boy, Abaye, are we talking about anything of the same weight? Is it the weight or the fact that it was weighed kineged it? I mean, what if you would find another stone that would be the same weight as the weight that you weighed against it, but you no longer have the Evan Tekuma? Would that be good? Ask Elio Anavi. Omar Abaye, another thing that mommy told me, was that if you've got this daily occurrence of a fever spike, the thing to do is take a brand newly minted zuz, a zuz or a chivar, it's very shiny, and go to an evaporation pond where salt, they would allow in water and then block it until it evaporated, leaving salt behind. Weigh the same amount of salt against the zuz, and then tie the salt that you've got, tie it around with a knot in your around the neck, the opening for your neck in your shirt, and tie it with a strand of hair, and that should work. Now, if you don't have any of that, what you can do, which might be easier, get onto an intersection. And an intersection is a perfect place to find a really big ant. Now, that would be a camel-sized ant, you know. A Shum Shumana Gamla. Now, these things carry enormous weights, many times their own body weight, right? So this ant is walking along, innocently carrying something, grab him, put him inside of a copper tube, and solder the copper tube in your air conditioner. And take the copper tube, block up the openings of the copper tube with some lead, and then seal it with 60 different seals. This doesn't mean literally 60. It's just a lashon of guzma. Put a lot of different things on it and close it up. And then levarzule, and shake that tube, okay? Now you carry it around a little bit while you're shaking it, and you say to the ant, okay, ant, are you good and confused? So let's make a deal. I'll take whatever you're carrying. You take whatever I'm carrying, which, of course, would mean all of his illnesses and his financial burdens and so on. Give it to the ant, and that way you'll be fine. Says Rav Acha bar Rav Huna, what are you, crazy? The last guy who picked up this ant was suffering from liver cancer. This ant now is carrying around liver cancer. You're picking up the ant, and you're saying, I'll take whatever you've got. You got to be nuts to risk your life on picking up an ant like that. How do you know the previous guy Dilma Enish Ashkechev Ivsik Beyani. Who knows what he gave this poor ant? So that can't be right. The right thing to do is to tell the ant, no deals. I'm letting you out of this copper tube only if you take it all. You've got to take my burden, your own burden. Listen, you're a big, strong gamla ant, right? So tu'unai v'tu'unach, alach. Now, if you don't happen to find exactly the kind of ant that's willing to go along with this deal, so what you could do is you could take a little cup and you go to a river and say to the river, river, Osvan Kuzadamaya, lend me a little cup of water because I've got this problem, urcha, this way, this routine constantly is driving me nuts of always getting this fever spike. And so I need it for the road, so to speak. Okay. Then you take that little bit of water, you put it around your head 7 times, throw it behind your back into the river, and then say, river, river, you can take it back. Shko maya de'ahavitli, take back the water, because that business that always bothers me every day, it's overs. Biyume ata ubiyume azal. It came for its day, and it left me in the same day, and therefore I'm free to have a wonderful day if you guys are ready to make a break.